Welcome to the Long Beach Social Experiment Podcast with your host, Steven Martinez, a.k.a. Mega Man. This is episode 279. Man, I've been looking forward for this episode for, man, since last year. I have a very special guest. He is a local native from the city of Long Beach over a little Cambodia town. When the people ask, when are you going to bring him on? You wanted him? You got him. My guest for this episode is the man himself. He's a legend in my eyes. The Cambodian Cowboy. What is up?
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks, Mega Man, for having the Cambodian Cowboy on.
Oh, my God.
At the Bong Barbecue in the LBC, man.
Oh, my God. You know, there's a lot of barbecue people that say, man, who's the best? Come try mine. I was like, I'm not going to mention names, but if you can't compete with the Cambodian Cowboy, just get off my DMs.
Man, I'm flattered. I'm flattered by that, man. Thank you so much for bringing yourself, your family, and your friends and the crew to come to Battambang Barbecue week in and week out. Oh. We're not talking about months apart. Like these guys, they hit the Battambang Barbecue at 10 Maya, Trademark, at 3 Weaver, everywhere we go, so they come through. So thank you for having me on your show, man.
Oh, man, it's an honor, but Chad, man, it's like, when the people ask, when I'm talking about the Rat Pack food bloggers, like you got Manny, I mean, we saw him on Sunday, where the food's at, the homie LB Food Coma. When they told me, yo, Mega Man, you got to get the Cambodian Cowboy, it's like, what? I'm telling you, this guy is going to fucking blow up. Whatever that comes out of their mouth, and they're from Long Beach, and they're from Little Cambodia, and they're from the east side, oh, it's done. And when we did the podcast, the next day, you were going to be serving your food at 10 Miles Brewery with Dan and Jesse. When I tried it, I was blown away. The first thing I said, wow, barbecue with garlic noodles. And I tried everything, and you have all these unique tastes. And one of the reasons why Cambodian Cowboy, I wanted to get you on, because I can tell that you're very passionate of what you do, and you're a people's person. And a lot of the Long Beach natives and the locals, we can relate because we all live in Long Beach. And what you're doing for the community, we're also doing for the Cambodians, and what you're doing for the city of Long Beach, man, you're doing a big thing.
Oh, man, thank you. I'm really, really flattered by those kind words. I really appreciate you, brother. But, you know, all these things, you know, it culminate from all the years, the struggles, you know, come from the Eastside LBC, and everything that you want and need on a daily basis, there's obstacles in front of you, whether you walk to school, whether you're going to the local store. And yeah, you know, every day you wake up, when you open that door to go out on the sidewalk or to the street to your homie's house, there's always struggles. And some of those were difficult times. And think when difficult times, you know, it hits you, it shapes you, it shapes your character to make you better. And I think going through those things as a refugee and growing up in a Cambodia town, it just made me better. And I put it like a chip on my shoulder, just everything that I work for, mm-hmm. is not by luck or, you know, by opportunities. It's hard work and making those opportunities for myself. So I feel so blessed with you, yeah. and everyone in Long Beach and the surrounding cities and stuff, just blessing me a week in and week out coming to my pop-up.
Yeah.
So I'm so blessed by that.
Man, we're family. And you see me every day. I was like, if I can't make it, I'm going to be here. But we're family. Anyone from Long Beach, we're all family. But I want to get to where it started. How old were you when you moved from Cambodia to Long Beach?
I was about 8 or 9 years old, being that I was born in the countryside. So there's no documentation.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, there's we didn't have, like, you know, stuff to record things. And my mom, she went through PTSD when my dad was murdered by the Communist Party.
Pol Pot.
Yeah, so I grew up, my dad, he's a military police officer in my village. And I'm from a province called Battambang, hence the word Battambang. So it's very agriculture, a lot of rice paddies, a lot of agriculture goes there. So my grandfather, he's a farmer. So every day I would go with him to the rice paddies with the water buffalo, with the ox on a little wooden cart, just very, very primitive. You know, hence this is like 1970. The rest of the world, they got cars, planes everywhere, but we're still so primitive in our everyday living.
So Chad, how old were you when you moved from Cambodia to Long Beach?
I was about 8 years old when I got here to Long Beach, California. This was our first destination. We came from LAX, and then we were in Long Beach, and we were actually like near Signal Hill, you know, where the National Guard is on Miramar, right there.
Okay.
Yeah, back of that post office, you know, the old post office and the new
one. Oh, right there. Right there by Stearns.
Yeah, near the Grand. It used to be the Elk Club. I don't know. You remember with that moose on top with the dome? Oh, man, it's way before you then.
Nah, I just heard about this. There was like you know where the public storage is at on Cherry and Anaheim? I mean, yeah. On Cherry and PCH?
Yeah.
That used to be a legendary bar back in the day. I don't know what it's called, Stags or something. But yeah, I heard a lot of like stories about this bar or this location and all. But how was it when you moved? Because I want to say this, and I think a lot of people don't know that there was a lot of discriminations when a lot of the Cambodian refugees were coming to Long Beach, and you had to deal with a lot of different types of gangs, Hispanics, Latinos, and all that. So to me, it was almost like you guys were easy targets when you were coming to Long Beach. And I, seeing that and knowing the history, I think it was really messed up. Because they think like, who are these new people coming in? This is my territory. But the thing is, you were trying to escape persecution of what was going on with Pol Pot and the communist regime. You were just trying to escape and just try to live a better life.
Yeah, that's right. When I came here, it was a post Vietnam. So you get a lot of Vietnam vets driving a camper shell. And one of the first schools I went to was Roosevelt Elementary School. And then after that, I went to Los Cerritos, you know, it's near the Virginia Country Club, you know, and then after that, I went to Lincoln. And when I went to Lincoln, because, you know, the school was close by, we grew up on California Avenue before it became Martin Luther King Avenue. And when I walked, you know, like a couple blocks, I would get racial stuff, like black people would call me goop, chink, Latinos would call me that. And then even white people driving their camper shell goop, go back to your country. But I didn't even know what it was, so you know, I didn't speak any English, and even going to school, my English was very limited. So when you are not the same like everybody else, you will be ostracized, you will be made fun of, you will be picked on. I don't know why it's the way it is, but you know, going through that day in and day out, so I learned how to defend myself. So you know, when we had recess, people would pick on me, I would like, you know, they would pick fights with me. Then when I fought back, when I let them have it, doesn't matter, one or two, three people, I put them on the ground, and that's when I got respect, and they left me alone. Mm-hmm. So I had to fight back because
this is back in the 80s.
Yeah, back in the early 80s in grade school. So when you get all those emotions and stuff, being bullied, bottled up so long, and when they really, really snap you and push your buttons, that's when you let them have it. So that's what I did. I learned to defend myself, stand up for myself. It wasn't like I have a clique or anything, but just me alone. Mm-hmm. I had to take care of business.
Yeah, you had to. And it was a part of growing up and learning, because this is before internet. We didn't have no social media. No. Like, whatever you saw is whatever you saw. And it's almost like in a way, but a lot of people don't even know about Long Beach. It was very active in those times.
Yes.
I mean, people are getting killed left and right. You got to go through this blocks. I mean, no one hasn't really saw the movie Freedom Rider.
Yeah.
You know, it talks about like, I had to walk to Banny, I had to walk to Pauley High or Wilson. There's certain areas where you have to be careful. You might get shot up at.
Yeah. You just had to be careful. This was in the mid 80s to late 80s. It was really, really a bad time because you get, you know, refugees such as Cambodians, Laotian, mm-hmm. Vietnamese, and they had to stand up for themselves because they were being picked on by Latino gangs, by African American gangs, that they didn't really welcome them. And I think it's a misconception on the part of African Americans and Latino gangs, because we were refugees. We're not selling drugs. We're not trying to take anyone's turn. We just, this is where they put us after we landed, you know, in LAX, and you know, coming from the refugee camp, they're like, okay, you stay in this apartment. Well, you go stay on Cherry. Well, you go stay on Huffman. No, you go stay on Peterson. So these Latin gangs, they like, hey, we need to take care of these guys. They're coming to our turf. They're trying to like, you know, make our life hard. Maybe they're going to start selling their own stuff. But we don't know anything about drugs or marijuana or cocaine. We just wanted to you know, walk to the liquor store, get something for our parents. And that's when we got roughed up. And when we got roughed up, that's when, you know, all these guys, we banded together, you know. I know friends and family, I didn't do any of those things. So they created, you know, the different Cambodian gangs that's, you know, that people know. And it was first to defend themselves from all these outsiders. And then, of course, you know, like everything else, whether it be they're Irish, they're African American or Mexican gangs, they turn on each other. That one doesn't like the other person, and they're like, hey, I'll make my own gang. So that's how it is. It's history in repeat again and again. And I just hope, you know, going forward in my kids' generation, that it'll be gone, that we can mobilize as a community, not with just a Cambodian American community, but other communities such as, you know, our Mexican American community, our African American community. So we need to like, you know, just mobilize and learn from the past and not let history repeat us. So.
I like where your head's at on that, because I want to be diverse and be very neutral with a lot of different nationalities, because it is like a rainbow city and stuff. You have different types of cultures and everything, and it's all family. And yeah, you're right. We don't want to repeat the past. And I think in a way, for things not to repeat the past, we need to have sit down conversations to understand each other. And I'm glad I lived back in the 80s and 90s before social media, because now with social media, Chad, a lot of people do not make the time and effort to get to know who you are as a person.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, just doing the barbecue, I met people from all walks of life. So everybody's been so supportive, whether they're Cambodians, whether they're Vietnamese, whether they're Mexican or El Salvadorian, mm-hmm. or Colombian. Mm-hmm. Or they're Americans and African American. They just show me a lot of love, and I just thank them for taking their time, pulling money out from their pocket just to try my barbecue. Yeah. And you know, they get to try it, they love it. They come back and before they leave, they always thank me, and that hits home with me, because for them to enjoy a good meal, to take them back, like they say, the barbecue is really good. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be back. It's just a blessing. I feel so blessed when they say that to me before they get in their car and drive to wherever they were.
Oh, from. Yeah. If there's one thing I like, when people try your barbecue, everyone's quiet. That's a good thing. Oh my God, be quiet, I'm eating right now. I just feel like, how long have you been barbecuing? Like, you've been doing this since you were little till now?
Yeah, yeah, because a lot of people, I think it's maybe an American thing, because the rest of the world, everything's open fire, where you're from the Philippines, where you're parts of Europe or parts of, you know, the Middle East or even Africa, open fire. Because as a young boy, I would go to the forest. I would get whatever firewood I could for my grandmother, for my grandfather, so they could cook a meal. And I learned how to cook open fire with my first catfish that I caught at the age of 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because my grandmother's house is right next to the riverbank, so it would get flooded once in a while, and it sits on still, just like the ones you see in Louisiana and parts of the South near the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
So when the monsoons come, when the water rise, like, you know, like they, you know, like you still have the top part to able to sleep and stuff, so you don't get any like venomous snakes or cobras climbing in there, because it sits on still. Yeah. It's a very dangerous place, you know, but you know, when we live there, we know what we deal with, you know, such as, you know, poisonous snakes and stuff, or tarantulas or bugs that are poisonous.
So. It was hot over there, huh?
It's super hot. Yeah, you know, because we live near the tropics. It's a jungle. Uh-huh. So when it gets very humid, it gets very hot. It's like, you know, it's like a steam oven living in there. But yeah, you know, your body gets used to it. So, you know, the human body is very amazing. It can adapt to any situation if you let it. When you alter it, then that's where you run into issues, man. Just, you
know, it's too hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think we're too comfortable in Long Beach now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, like, I think it's more an American thing. Like, mm-hmm. it's just, they think, like, no one can do open fire. So when I learned how to, I was chefing for quite a while before I started barbecuing. And my journey, after I finished high school, because I went to 1 year in Long Beach Poly, then I went to a medical magnet because I wanted to pursue education, being a surgeon or anesthesiologist.
Really?
Yeah, I took the blue line every day. To King Drew Medical Magnet on 120th Street in Wilmington. So it's in South Central LA, and we were like the only like two Cambodians, me and my brother, that attended that magnet program. And we got to go to the hospital, we got to go to the morgue, we got to see like live surgery and
during
this
surgery?
Yeah, so during this time, like, people thought like we were like Doogie Howser. Cause, you know, the sitcom, one of the things was just, you know, Doogie Howser was a big show.
So tell me about, like, did you say Doogie Howser? Cause that was my favorite TV show.
Yeah, you know, King Drew offered like one of the awesome experiences of my life in academics in high school. So we, one day of the week, we would go to the hospital. We would observe, like, you know, in the ER, I got to take out stitches for doctors. I got to see live surgery, labor. Then we even like work in the morgue. I even work in cytology. We had to log in different specimen from a pathology.
Wow.
After they did their biopsy. So I really, really learned a lot from there. And I think it really changed my life and prepared me, because I really wanted to be an anesthesiologist or a surgeon, because my mentor, she was head of the anesthesiology department at Martin Luther King Hospital when it was Martin Luther King. And they always got a bad rep because all the violence around them. And they would call it Killer King, which is, it's just so wrong. Like there's so many awesome doctors that work for free many hours, so they could take care of a lot of trauma, because back then there was a lot of gang violence every day in Compton and South Central and neighboring cities. So they would go to King Hospital
to get that experience.
Yeah, because it was a county hospital. It had ER and trauma. They treated that, so that's why it got its name, Killer King. And I hated the name. I didn't think that was right for all the doctors that are
to get a bad rep.
Yeah, to bad rep. And they had the Allied Health, which is Charles Drew. So Charles Drew, he's a really amazing man. He first founded like the platelets and stuff by doing a blood transfusion and stuff. So he's pretty famous. And I got to meet Ben Carson, the guy who was with the Trump, with the Homeland Housing Authority, and I think he's still in politics, but he was really, really an awesome man. I got to meet him. I got his book, Gifted Hands. He was the first surgeon to separate Siamese twins. So I hate to go into all this medical background with barbecue. Like, what is going on here?
No, but this is something where it's like a lot of people don't know, because people are always going to ask, like, get more depth, get more deep of to know who is Chad is. And a lot of people don't even know that. And you've been doing this for so long, but do you feel like you always wanted to work in the medical field, but at the same time, you wanted to make barbecue?
Yeah, barbecue came after I really wanted to be a surgeon. I really liked the human body, learning different cells, learning different approaches, different theory to different types of surgery, whether it be retinal detachment, whether it be a laparoscopy, or removing a tube, or doing vasovasectomy. And that came later in my career. So I went to Texas after that, like in the mid-90s,
mm-hmm.
after all the riots, all that crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So I went to Hereford, Texas, because my stepdad, he got a job at the regional hospital as a physician assistant.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, he took care of their satellite clinic. So, you know, I didn't have anything to do. I just take care of my siblings, like, you know, until they came from school, from middle school, high school. So I went out there to look for a job. And the job I got was working at a meat packaging plant. And it was owned by Cargill. So it's called XL plant. So that's where I got my first experience working on the floor, on the gut table, different department, the ground beef, the tri-tip area, the fajita area. So that's where for 5 years, you know, I learned how to butcher a whole cow. And on the weekends, there's really nothing doing a panhandle. It's all flat. It's all, you know, cows everywhere, millions and millions of them. And mm-hmm. So I went to go help my friends at the ostrich farm, at the emu farm. And of course, you know, at the cattle ranch. And just learning it and just wanting to help, because, you know, they didn't want to be there. They're like, man, I got to go out and party. Where's the next part? But they had to go to the big cities such as Amarillo. We were in a small town called Hereford. So, but, you know, I stuck around. Their parents really liked me. They really got to know me. And I would cook for them. Like, how do you know how to cook? Because, you know, being the oldest, being that, you know, I was always around food, helping my grandparents, yeah. my mom. So I knew
the catfish story.
Yeah, I knew how to cook all the different dishes at such a young age. So me being that, you know, I'm in, you know, past my, I'm 19, 20. I could really make all different Asian dishes already at that age.
And when you were staying in Texas, were you going to a lot of the barbecue scenes out there and trying to see how they do it? And maybe when you do come back to Long Beach, you're going to have your little tweaks of how you want your Cambodian cuisine barbecue to be.
It didn't happen that way. It's a non-traditional way. So they in the panhandle, there wasn't a lot of great barbecue. A lot of the great barbecue come from Central Texas or down in the Southwest, such as Austin, such as Dripping Springs, such as different parts over there where they're famous, whether it be the Salt Lick, whether it be Franklin's. I could go on and on. So there wasn't a lot of great barbecue like in Southern Texas in the Panhandle. But I did try a lot of the barbecue the way that it's supposed to be smoked by my friends' parents and stuff. So it's like super slow. I mean, I come back like, hey, your uncle's still smoking that deer meat. So I learned, but I was like, at first I didn't like, why is he taking so long to smoke a deer meat?
24 hours. Oh yeah.
Yeah, so it took him like a good 15, 16 hours. But when I tried, it was so good. It was so soft, so moist. And he made it like, putting that tallow on to make it, all that fat to stick together with the meat to make it delicious.
It's the temperature. And a lot of people don't know this. Like, man, with barbecue people, they're up the whole night.
Yeah.
You have to check every hour, the temperature and all that stuff. That's how I see it as. And I'll be honest, I try a lot of barbecue. When I try, I also spend a night at their houses because they're up all night, picking up every hour and stuff to get ready for the next day. And that's why I was like, wow, this is like where a lot of barbecue people dedicate their time to make good food for us to eat.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it right there. So time is of the essence, and time is money too, because you spend all this time, all this money getting like prime cuts and stuff and trimming and seasoning it and then putting wood, checking the bark. It's a whole science to it.
We didn't talk about the wood. You have to be a certain type of wood.
I sort of tell people, I let the cat out of the bag of what type of wood I use, but it doesn't really matter. Like, people tell their secret stuff, but it's a matter of execution. You could be the best at telling stuff to the next generation or someone you're trying to groom or make you learn, but it's a matter of execution. So I use a red oak because I think using red oak gives that nice extra bark on the meat. It gives you that red hue that's a little bit different than most barbecue.
Okay.
Using post oak or white oak. And I like the way it burns. It's a hardwood. It burns nicely. It burns long. So that's the reason why I like using a red oak. And in Central California, where tri-tip, most of tri-tip people in California know what tri-tip is, in Santa Maria and stuff with the Santa Maria grill. So people in the Central Coast, the Central Valley, that's what they're accustomed to, using a red oak to grill their tri-tip.
Damn, that's the thing. It's always about the wood. It's always about the temperature and stuff. When you were like trying to get this barbecue running, did you start like when everything was locked down, pandemic?
Yeah, not only that it was locked down, so I became a new dad again with a third son.
Congrats!
With my wife during the pandemic. So I can remember like it was yesterday. It was the third week of March. So I'm still working, but as per diem at the surgery center as a surgical assistant. So, and then they closed everything up, so no one could go in to have their surgery. Only the elective surgery is only like emergency surgery if you need one. It was open because everything was locked down.
It's crazy.
So I didn't know what to do. Like most people, not that I panicked, but I had to do a lot of soul searching to see what I want to do next. Like, is this the time for me to finally like do what I love? So then I made a call to my friend. And my friend, he's been doing barbecue also, but he just did it, just to make money, side money and stuff. But I took it seriously. I had a lot of experience as a chef. I have a lot of experience in open fire. I have a lot of experience in technique and sauces and stuff. And making delicious food and barbecue, and just taking my time to perfect certain things coming from a surgical medical background. So that's what. Reason why I chose to start my own barbecue business during the pandemic. It was tough because standing in a corner on Market and Cherry and Washington in front of Superior, just
I know where that.
Yeah, so I got like a few.
Ruthless, right? I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Superior.
Yeah,
way
Superior
up there.
Yeah.
Oh, right there by the Little Caesars. Okay.
Yeah, by Little Caesars and across the street. And here's an Asian guy, with a cowboy hat and boot, just slanging away, brisket and stuff. Two or three orders. Some days I get 10 orders, barely made the cut of all my supply, but I kept at it because I believe like other people should try it. And once they try it, they're going to be blown away by the way that I make Texas style barbecue.
Yeah. And you just, I'm just kind of a little like speechless. Like everyone has to start somewhere.
Yes.
And you kept on grinding, kept on grinding. And I always tell people, you got to keep on grinding. You're going to get there, but it's going to take time. But when you did, you slowly started seeing, okay, social media, the barbecue is like, okay, we got a new sheriff in town when it comes to barbecue. And you did it.
Yeah. You know, like I'm from Eastside Long Beach. When people say the word grinding, so a lot of young people and even people my generation, they don't know what grinding is. So grinding is being the first to come in, mm-hmm. having hard work, mm-hmm. having consistency, mm-hmm. and persistent. So those four elements are what's grinding in the hood where it comes from. I know people like to be cliche from, you know, the hip hop nation and, you know, from the street and stuff, but that's what really grinding is. And then and the fifth one, from doing all that grinding, you give yourself the opportunity. You're making opportunity for yourself. So that's what happened. Like, you know, all the food guys such as, you know, Eater, LBC, yeah. and Long Beach Food Coma, and where Tamit, Ta and everybody and yourself, that's where you guys came in and tried my barbecue, and that was it, you know. And then word got around, and then, you know, and then, you know, of course, you know, it hit Brian Addison. He's, you know, he's like the godfather of the Long Beach food scene. So he came out and tried, and he was blown away by, you know, meeting me last year at the Taco Festival at the Scottish Rite.
Yeah.
Right there. So that's where history happened, where Long Beach Food Coma finally introduced me to me and Brian. We finally got to chop it up and talk about food.
And do you feel, because I know you're a very humble person and we don't care about clout. I don't care about clout. But there's a lot of people who care about clout. Mm-hmm. But with you, you just want to make good food and just for us to love. And you're so humble. You know how to talk. It's like, this is the perfect guest for my show or for anyone's show. Because you are Long Beach. To me, I think you are Long Beach.
Yeah, I don't know about that, man.
Well, you are.
Just you know, and then, you know, after
trying to hype him up.
you know, so Brian Addison writes the Eater article about you know, the Cambodian cowboy. And that thing just took off. And I was a sensation overnight because literally people that I haven't been friends with for 15, 20 years or coworkers, they were lighting up my cell phone. They were lighting up, you know, it's like from 5 a.m. all the way till the next day, I could count. It's like hundreds and hundreds of DMs congratulating me, saying like, hey, is that you? Congratulations. Because people thought I was still doing surgery, you know, because I was like soul searching to take care of my family, to put food on a table for my wife and my children. So it was really going through a tough time, and to have that happen, to have good people that believe in another good person that's trying, so that really fueled me to take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people always ask like, hey, who did you contact? Who did you call? So, you know,
since I'm
on this show, I don't call anybody. They call me. Not to say that I'm all that, whatever, but they reach out. They wanted to get to know me. They wanted my story. They want to know how I made the queue. And some people accusing, you don't have an offset smoker. You're not a Texas barbecue. Like, people were like, you know, just point their fingers at me, but I didn't really care because I'm 51. People think like I'm, you know, probably 30 or something by the way I look, but I didn't really care. It's what I did, and the people that believe in my product, such as you and other people in Long Beach and the surrounding area, and people outside of the state, they flew in. I got one man who flew in from Frisco to LAX, and the first thing he came was to 10 Mile to try my barbecue.
What?
And then, you know, and another gal, her dad flew in from Honolulu. He lives out there. He retired, so he came and tried the barbecue. And we got these couple kids that came all the way from Singapore. They saw it on Eater, social media. So I don't know who has the analytics on my article, but it just went crazy viral, because I always read about other people going viral. You know, just like, oh, that's kind of cool what they're doing on TikTok or Instagram. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty funny.
My mom's coming, dope. So she'll try your barbecue this Friday. Because the thing is, it's like, man, you meet all these good people in these food places. And I told my mom, I love Long Beach. Yeah, I lived all around. But when I told my mom, when you do come to the event, Absolute Best of Long Beach, the first thing you have to try is Cambodian cowboys, and a lot of other people too. But I'm just, because you've been trying to go to the Northern California a lot. So we kind of not really know the same people, but we know where people live in the city of Modesto.
Oh yeah, not just Modesto, man. I think it's just a California thing, us being California kids. We're, and you know me, I always tell you story up and down the coast. Like, you didn't know I go to Stockton to do all my pop-up at the Cambodian New Year.
I didn't know
for last decade. And a lot of people didn't know because I didn't really put my journey out there. I just go out there and do it, man. Try and do the best that I can, trying to kill it. And you know, on my own, no competition with anybody. But just day in and day out, kind of remind me of Kobe Bryant, you know? He goes into the gym, first to the gym, shooting, practice, the same shot, different shots, but just working away. So I took the Mamba mentality, because, you know, when he was young, man, I didn't give him any love because I'm like a Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the original Showtime.
Oh, yeah.
When he came on the scene, he really let me down by shooting air balls with, you know, Nick Van Exel and stuff.
I remember that game. That was a Utah Jazz, 2 air balls. And the thing is, what I liked about, because no one really talks about those 2 air balls with the playoffs, who went to say, hey, you're a young kid, you're going to do good? Antoine Carr.
Yeah.
From the Utah Jazz, he's like, hey, you're going to be okay. You're going to make it. You're going to be one of the greatest. And no one really talks about that.
Yeah, yeah. So just living by that, you know, by that mentality of being the first to wake up, getting everything ready. For myself, it wasn't, I didn't really care if people were doing other things. I really wanted to be out there and paying homage to the ones before me, such as my grandparents, my father, now my late father-in-law. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm sorry for your loss.
Yes. Yeah, you know, recently, you know, lost him. He had a massive heart attack again, and that was it. But, you know, just paying homage to the ones before me. So that's what fuels the firebox in my heart to better myself and to better my product. And just to be a good father and a good husband and stuff. You know, just living the best that I can for right now, because I don't know if COVID taught us anything. It's just live your life to the fullest. Don't let anyone judge you, you know. If you're doing something that you're happy, go out there and do it. If you're not harming anyone and stuff, just live your life. Do the best that you can.
I feel if a lot of people don't know when those lockdowns happen, you know, to me, I lost a lot of people. I lost about, in 3 years, about 44 people who committed suicide or mental health, or they lost their business. And I really want to be a huge advocate of, you know, to give a lot of people love and a lot of shine, because a lot of people don't know when those small businesses closed down, they were looking for help from social media or from podcasters or influencers that, hey, can you give me a little love or anything so I can still be afloat, I can still keep my business going for the next couple of days. It just, to me, it's like, it sucks. Yeah. But we have to learn from our mistakes. We learn to be better people. If there's people out there that haven't learned from those 3 years, it's sad.
Yeah, you're right on that. You know, like, people call me that, you know, tell me, I mean, that I inspire them to do what they do, but I don't look at myself like that. I just, my body work, just waking up every day, every week, doing pop-up and being everywhere. And they always ask me how good. It's a discipline, you know. Like, sometimes I might not have the greatest pop-up, or I might not have, you know, like, someone might have, like, not got their meal correctly. So I go home, but when I go home, I dissect, I simplify things to, okay, what can I do tomorrow to be better? So I think that's what people should do. I know sometimes, you know, people aren't their very best, whether it be their family, their friends, or a good coworker. And it's okay. You just go home and you just dissect, you just simplify, so you come back tomorrow and be better. Like, you know, doing a project with your coworker, be better as a husband. Tell them, you know, your spouse or your partner how much you care about it, how much you need them, or just, you know, being better as a son, as a daughter, telling your folks, you know, because they're getting older. Like, it's never the end. So don't ever think like no one's there. Just go home and soul search and pray, and whatever you need to do, just simplify and just come back better. Because when you wake up tomorrow, the sun's gonna shine. That's your new day, and you're gonna go out there and be a killer at what you want to do in life.
That is something where I'm going to learn about that. Just, if you soul search, a lot of people don't want to soul search. And, you know, like, you got to follow your dreams. You followed your dream and look where you're at now. And with your wife and your kids, do they feel like, just being a little personal, but they're proud of you, what you do? Yeah. And Long Beach is proud of you. And that's the thing where when you bring different types of colors, nationalities, ethnicities, and they try your food, it just, to be honest, it just brings people together.
Yeah, I'm glad that Batamon Barbecue and the Cambodian Cowboy is able to be the medium for everybody's happiness, whether it be food or just being a community leader. And speaking of community, I've been raised in Long Beach for like 43 years, and with that 5 years in Texas, so I pretty much know the city of Long Beach, all the history, and not just Long Beach, but mostly like my Cambodian American community, how it grew, how it changed, how we still, with gentrification coming in, how we could be better.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah, to assist small businesses, to assist our heritage, our culture, not just our culture, to grow with other people's culture that are minority community that are struggling, such as his own, to learn from each other, to model from each other, not to hinder each other from reaching the same goal.
Yeah, it's just, I feel where I live on the east side, you see a lot of gentrification on Long Beach. To me, I see it hitting hard in Little Cambodia. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's hitting hard because I think a lot of components play a role in that, such as the Cambodian American community itself,
yeah,
such as the city, and such as landlords of the commercial building and outside influence. So those elements, you can't just point at one. Because people like to point at one component of the issue, and that's not gonna help. There's many components when you talk about gentrification, and we need to be as better people in our community, learning financial literacy, such as owning your own building or getting grants to remodel or a loan, lower loan. So those things are lacking in our minority community. To make our community better, to clean up our community,
yes,
and to record things. When you record things, you have a ledger, you have like a report, or it could be like just letting the police know. It's not you being a snitch or anything. So we're going back to like the 90s, the 80s, oh, you can do it, you're a snitch. Like, no, I'm not snitching. I just want people to walk and come enjoy like a donut, come enjoy like a bowl of gateo, that they're gonna be okay. They're not gonna be thrown, they're not gonna be jumped or beat up or shot at. Like, that is not snitching. If you're hurting innocent people, that means you're a bad person. They don't have no affiliation with what you're doing on the street, whatever, mm-hmm. And you're hurting innocent people. And so that's the reason why in the late 80s and 90s, a lot of people, innocent people, lost their kids, their babies,
yeah,
their brother and sister, and that really like hit home to a lot of people. Hey, they're not even gang banging. It was a straight bullet kill, and that's really awful. I mean, they didn't even get a chance to fight. They didn't get a chance to struggle, to survive for their life. They just got shot and now they're dead. So that's why I think it hits home. It caused a lot of trauma, PTSD until now. And we need to change that mindset by cleaning up our business, going like asking for a grant or talking with the community leaders. How can we better our street? How can we bring more business? How can we not let big business control what dictate what we buy, what we eat? So I think that has a long way, and then we keep visiting again and again, and in my lifetime I want to see that change in on Anaheim corridor, on the west side, and even on Magnolia, PCH, it goes on and on. But we can't fix it in one day, but we can take the steps, and we don't let up. When we let up, take the gas off the pedal, that's when the gentrification begins again. That's why condos are up again. If they do buy the condo, that means at least they could contribute to the local economy. But if they're renting, it's not going to really help, because you're dishing out money that's not even staying in Long Beach.
What I have a problem with gentrification, Chad, is that we're losing our identity. And that hurts me the most when you have gentrification hitting. There's a lot of history in Long Beach, and they're being extinct every day. And I just don't like it. You don't see a VIP Records anymore. Now it's 7-Eleven. There's certain areas. It's just, there's a lot of people who reminisce of those times, and you should keep those afloat, but it's just something, you're right. We're going to do whatever we can. And I'm going to be going to a lot of these communities, going to sit down with these council people and see what we can do. Where's our money going to in Long Beach? I want to know everything. And you're right. You have to record everything, because it's all about data. It's all about facts. It's like, hey, this is what's going on. And no one wants to be canceled. No one wants to be silent or be a laugh. It's like, hey, look what's going on. Like, they don't want that. And yeah. You have to speak up.
Yeah, yeah. You know, going back with the city, I've seen mayors come, I've seen mayors go, I've seen councilmen, councilwomen come and go, and they really need to take care of the people, not use us as a stepping stone towards their congressman, you know, Congress career or to a state career. You really need, because, you know, me and you, we grew up here and being raised here in the East Side LBC and Long Beach as a whole, and it keeps being played out again and again, not taking care of the people that really need it most. And sooner or later, we're going to run out of time, because things will get worse, or there'll be like condo and stuff. It won't, you know, you won't even like, it is Cambodia town, but there's no Cambodians living in here, just like other parts of town, like the Filipino town. There's very few Filipinos, people living in Filipino town in LA. They're around that area, they moved out, but there is, it's called Filipino town, but yeah. There's not a lot of Filipinos left or Filipino businesses left.
Yeah, I remember when the lockdowns happened and the riots happened here in Long Beach. They went hard in little Cambodia town, like breaking into people's places and all. First time ever I seen this before in my life. The whole city, when all the riots came, when all these outside people came and fucked up our city, the whole city got together and cleaned up everything in 8 hours. People was like, hey, you need any help? You need any help? We're like, it doesn't matter what color, we care about our city. I cried. Yeah. I never seen that before with our city. I cried. Because, you know, it hurts. You know, when you see a lot of small business getting broken into, mm-hmm. a lot of Cambodian stores, businesses in that Anaheim getting broken into, then you have different types of colors. Like, hey, do you need any help? I'll clean this. Do you need a board? It's the community.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I don't know where these things, you know, factor in and who's really doing all these bad things to mess up our city and to the minority community. There's a lot of factors that played. I'm not gonna, you know, talk about it for something that I don't know. But,
yes.
But like you said, you know, it affected all the small business, and these laws that were passed on to from the first riot in the early 90s.
Yeah.
It was implemented like if there's a civil unrest that you're not gonna be covered, and these small businesses weren't covered because those insurance companies already put those things in place back in the early 90s. Like if there's a civil unrest. On fire, they're not gonna pay out, and that's what happened. So a lot of people who live in the neighborhood, and then some people in the neighborhood actually broke in and stuff, you know, with the outside help of these you know organized gangs or organization. Yeah. They're not even gang; they're just opportunists, people, mercenaries to destroy minority community, especially, and not just the minority businesses, but they went to the heart of like. Like Long Beach, you know, taking all those clothes and all those shoes, you know, because, you know, the promenade, it was changing the pike and stuff. It was buzzing. And then now it's like really bad. Like the downtown Long Beach is like what it was in the 90s, super quiet, barely any traffic.
It was fucked up.
So that's what you see now because of that. And not a lot of people talk about it. And even city people mismanaging of funds, letting the Long Beach Convention Center, letting them go buck wild on money that they never had, like a person checking their books, and so they're just spending, and those are taxpayer dollars, like taxpayer grants that's supposed to be allocated towards a city stuff or, you know, other communities to better our community as a whole, as the city of Long Beach. So that's a totally different subject.
No.
I'm just speaking.
And I get it, because I want to know where our money is going to. Why is it that the city and everything, they only protect 2nd Street, Bixby Nose, and 4th Street? Or in the rich areas, or like in Cal State, but when it comes to inner cities and certain areas, even on the west side or here, we don't see anything changing.
Yeah, we don't see, and you just made that point. So in my observation, 43 years being here in Long Beach, and mostly, you know, East Side Long Beach and North Side Long Beach, mm-hmm. there's not a big department store anywhere near here. Mm-hmm. There's not a big grocery stores that's near here. The only thing closest to us was Food for Less. Like that's, you know, Food for Less is like
Signal Hill?
Yeah.
I opened that store.
Yeah. So, you know, being that I know my, you know, so I had to do like research on where my beef goes to from, like, so the higher tier, like department store, like grocery store would be Arouse or Pavilions. And after that, it'll trickle down to a Bond and stuff. Then after that, it goes to their lower subsidy, which is always in the smaller minority community. Yeah. When it's going to be expired. where it's gonna be bad. They're gonna sell it at a cheaper rate, was food for less. So that's their lowest tier, you know, and it would be always be in the community. And after it even goes to a lower tier, it goes to the Superior Mart, it goes to all the different Asian grocery stores, and we would, you know, and things were cheaper, but it's about to expire. But you know, what can you do? Like, hey, I'm gonna buy that pallet that's like only $100 and I'll make some money on it. And like, yeah, we'll buy that pallet. So a lot of people don't understand how food ways work in the food business, how different department stores are there. Whole Foods, you know, they, you know, of course, you know, it's always at a nicer neighborhood. They have money, they have the best product and stuff. But after that, it'll go to stuff that expired. Yeah. Like, why is that the chicken looking orange? Why is it waterboard like at Superior Market? And sometimes you see like not the same thing, like maggots and stuff in grocery out, you wouldn't go there again because it's such at a bad state that the minority company are willing to buy to make a you know, money for their grocery chain, you know, which really is really sad, you know. And a lot of people don't pay attention to, but I think me being a chef and just paying attention where food is sourced, so I was really mindful of that. So when I make stuff, I don't really try to waste it. If people are like, why don't you make more barbecue? Look, you just turned away 34. Like, I do make a lot of barbecue, but I sold out, and I'll come back tomorrow. You want to get some, but I don't want to waste any food.
Is that the thing where you have to be limited of how many people? Okay, today it's always Sunday. Okay, this is we're gonna make this for a certain amount of people. Do you have to go by that? Try to project.
Yeah. As a business person, I have to project. I have to know my par level, or to bump up my par level a little bit to fit the budget. Because being that we're in a recession, it's gonna really, you know, not just recession, but inflation. So people forget, like, why is everything so bad, so expensive? So the two factors, we're in a recession and there's an inflation. Those two factors are gonna be like, there's just a couple more component and we'll be in a depression. So a lot of people don't know that we're so close on the brink of, because where all this money, where is it going? Like, who has it? And why, you know, and then, you know, like, no one's getting raises like they used to, and everything costs so much, from gas to fuel, to food, to everything, to rent, to housing, to, you can't buy a home anymore because, you know, you buy a $650,000 home. If there's one available in Long Beach, your rent, your mortgage will be only $5,000. Like, who has $5,000 like sitting around that has like a 680 FICO score, that's doing five jobs? I don't know, but it's really bad out there.
Yeah, it's bad. And what I realize is, like, I thought San Francisco was the most expensive city to live at in California. It's Long Beach. Yeah, an average house is about 2.6, maybe 1.6, $1.2 million and everything. Just really depends. But yeah, it's hard because a lot of people, they're moving to San Bernardino, Victorville, because the houses are cheaper, but they're commuting back to work to Long Beach. Yeah, it's a vacation, man. It's hitting hard.
Yeah, it's hitting hard, like, you know, and then the inflation, the recession. So we don't know where it's going, but, you know, it's just tough for the minority community, and then for the community as a whole. Long Beach, like, no one has a clear pathway of solving homelessness.
It's a lot of issues.
Yeah, it's a lot of issues. We have to take it. I see it not just a Long Beach thing, but just a state thing and a national thing. We keep kicking the can down the road. Like, one of these days, a ticking time bomb is going to really blow, whether it be homelessness, whether it be the debt, or whether it be, like, you know,
mental health.
Mental health or assault rifles. I mean, you know, there's always some shooting and stuff. It keeps going. And then there's kids, there are babies involved. Like, okay, like, when are we going to, like, say that's it? Like, we still keep kicking the can, whether it be politicians or gun rights or people, you know, it goes on. And other countries aren't really facing that type of stuff where people just randomly shooting and stuff. Well, you can't just take one and say, you know, use the example. Well, there's someone in China, they stabbed like 10 people and stuff. You can't really use that to what's happening in America. Because this, you know, mass shootings every week now.
I see it more like this. If you see certain mass shootings in this, it's what you're seeing on social media for you to be programmed your mind to go out there and do what you're going to do. So that's the thing where I feel the situation happened in Tennessee with that transgender, you know, and all. It's what she was programmed of, what social media or what she was being taught at for her to do that, or him. I don't want to get into that. It's just something, it's very sensitive. Because, you know, we're from Long Beach, and you know, it's just when it comes to the LGBTQ, you know, like, it's a lot of sensitive matters, like, you know, because we're all family, but I feel like, why do you gotta talk about this? Why do you gotta talk about that? But is this something where it's like, I just kind of stay away from this, kind of that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, their community, it's hard too, because they got so many different sub-community in there too. I have, you know, not that I don't want to say, I do understand, but not to where they understand where it's different categories. So it's tough, yeah, and and they can't really blame, modern society right now where it's going through a change, because we're all still trying to learn and we're still trying to curve to respect each other's space, to respect each other's sexuality. So it's tough on everybody. You can't really, like, oh, you don't know what it's like, and then you cancel someone or you shut them up, because we're all still trying to learn together, not by our own or by, you know, our city, but just by together. Like, it's never been like this before. And we all want to learn and have progress together, not just individuals, you know.
And that's what I do. I like to sit down with a lot of organizations, activists, or, you know, of their ethnicity, for who they are, if they're want to be considered as a him or could consider them as a her, you know, like, I want to understand what's transition, why, you know. You just have to have an open mind, that's it.
Yeah, to me it starts off by that person looking me in the eye, introducing their name. That's who I go by. I don't care their sex, not that I don't care, it's like, you know, their sexuality is like, you know, their personal style, would never, but getting to know them by their first name, shaking their hand, and just treating everyone as equal. So when you treat everybody as equal, there's really nothing that they can point at you to say that you're treating another person better than another person. Like, it's not. It's just like, what's your name? Nice to meet you. It's very, very, you know.
And that's how you start a conversation. Yeah. And that's the thing, I like to interact. I think a lot of people don't even know this, but I talk about it. You know, people always ask, you know, hey, Mega Man, why do you do a podcast? I used to be antisocial. I used to be depressed, anxiety. I had a stuttering problem. So these are the things what I like to do podcasts to have an interaction, get to know who you are as a person before I make my assumptions. Because a lot of people these days, they make their assumptions because they don't not take the time and effort to get to know you. But when they do realize, oh, I read him wrong.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah, and then, you know, everything's all clickbait, what people use. Like, oh, he's like that. I'm clicking to the next. That guy's bad. Like, dude, that's just a little part of who they are. You can't really judge a person. You can't really generalize. Like, you know, like, take for instance, for me, like, oh, he's Asian, he's wearing cowboy boots and a hat, why are you trying to mimic like a white cowboy? Like, people don't get
you
it.
You had that before?
No,
I'm gonna say, like, who's this?
Yeah, you hear it, people tell you. It's not, they won't say it to my face because they know But, you know, people would tell me, and it doesn't really bother me because I think it's just ignorance, because, you know, just because you live in a rural life, and you like the music and you love Texas and stuff, it's where the journey took you. Like me being, if I went to Cambodia, you're so American, you're not Cambodian enough. You know, if you always go to Cambodia, you know, you always have people that doubt you, question you. So I don't really. I love barbecue and I love the Lone Star State where my journey took me, and just being here, a Southern California guy that grew up here, and being able to mix those two cultures together, and everybody loves it. So I'm still gonna do what I do, and I'm not gonna let anyone stop me but myself.
Yeah, I had a person, and I'll tell you off air, 2 days ago, it's gonna be a fake page. And they said, why are you gonna have this Cambodian cowboy on your show? You know, like, what's this the thing about you supporting Cambodians? And this is where assumption comes into play, because, like, they are part of my people, they are part of the community, they are part of my family. Oh, and by the way, my kids are half Mexican, half Cambodian. And he kind of, like, just shut up and just blocked me.
So ignorant is bliss. Like, people don't know you, and they always think, like, you owe them to explain. You don't need to explain nothing. No. They want to get to know you. They come and talk to you, support you, whether it be a podcast, whether it be a barbecue or a taco. So speaking of that, man, I got great news for you, man, on the show. So May 10th, it's on lockdown. So we got Chris, she's the manager at El Barrio Cantino.
What? Yeah. I know my girl, we're up there, Delosa.
Yeah. Yeah, so we I'm doing a collaboration. It's called Ode to Mama.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna do a Cambodian.
I told her about you.
Tapas and with Chef Ulysses, he's over there. So I can't wait to to get down and let my Latino brothers try Cambodian food fused with Mexican food, man. I just can't wait. It's just, you know, I was talking to someone earlier, like when we got here as refugees, like we didn't know any Mexican food. We would go to a Del Taco or Taco Bell at night after the club. We didn't know back then. Yeah, back then we didn't.
Big fat tacos, right?
Yeah, they didn't really have a lot of like good street taco. Was it
not like how it is now?
Yeah, it was like King Taco or you know. And then when the taco scene blew up, when we got introduced to real taco, like back in different parts of Mexico, where you're from, Guadalajara or Zacatecas,
Sinaloa, TJ.
Yeah, TJ. And when we got the real taco, we were hooked. That's why there's a huge taco movement.
Street tacos.
And then people, to all my Latino friends and Mexican friends, it wasn't just Mexican that love it. It was everybody that liked taco, whether you're Cambodian, whether you're white, you're Vietnamese, you're Korean. So those are the people that's helping the taco movement. That's why it's blowing up in Southern California, mm-hmm. Taco Tuesday and all that. So a lot of people don't know. Like, no, you have to really dissect who's helping the movement. Not just Mexicans, man.
It's a
Central American kids. Yeah. It's every the Asians, the mm-hmm. African Americans, the white Americans. They're the ones that wants the real taco.
When you go to these pop-ups or anything, when you have a day off, because you're a very busy guy, they'll be like, "Oh shit, it's the Cambodian cowboy."
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's just crazy, man. Just going, you know.
Take it.
Yeah.
Just take it. Just take it.
So I went to one of my friends' a concert. He's pretty famous. He does a tour across America, and he did a tour in Australia. Now he's going to go do a tour in Cambodia. His name is Jay Chan. He's one of the hardest working...
Jay Chan?
Yeah, he's one of the most hardworking entertainer in as a Cambodian American. So I went to his concert. Yeah, I went up there to introduce... So we're dancing, you know, it's like Saravan, it's like the cumbia of Cambodia. It's a circle dance, right? Just show off your girl, you're in the back, just like cumbia, you know? So going back to my Texas days, so I got introduced to Tejano music in the mid-90s with Selena, La Paz and all that. I know my band, yeah. Yeah, they tour, you know, Texas, you know, mm-hmm. Tejano music. So cumbia is like, you know, if you're a really good cumbia dancer, you have, you know, different ways to show off your girl. That's the way you dance. It's not you're following her, but a lot of people don't mm-hmm. understand because, you know, they just look at it. Even the young Mexican guys, you know, no, if you know, your girl there, you got to show off. You got to put the moves. So, you know, like, this is my girl. And, you know, this is how we get down. So Saravan is the same way. We have hand gestures and dances to show off
a beautiful girl
who mm-hmm. she's wearing the beautiful cultural dress
yeah.
and stuff. Mm-hmm. So going back to that, so you know, I would dance with my wife and then people would tap me on the shoulder. Are you the Cambodian cowboy? Can I get a picture? They were so super polite and like, I was like, okay, yeah. And then we had to stop. And the fourth, fifth time, my wife got annoyed a little bit. You know, we're trying to enjoy dance, but you know, what can I do? It's just, you know, people never seen you before. They saw you on TV. They saw on CBS Morning News. Mm-hmm. So you're finally there in person. They want that picture, you know? So I felt like I'll just do it, but I don't feel like I'm a star or anything. It's just like, you know, just the people's person. I'm just like everybody else. You know?
And that's good to feel like you're still be yourself. Be humble. Never get too cocky, guys. I know people in the entertainment, like going outside of Long Beach, I've seen people like that. But you and I just feel like, again, we're humble people from Long Beach. We're just trying to show some love. That's it. You know, like, I like what you do. Oh, I was going to ask you, when you go to certain parties, do you wear your Cambodian cowboy hat?
Oh, yeah. I wear my hat because because the event that I go to, I'm always catering it and I'm representing my brand also. I'm representing my Texas Cambodian heritage also. Mm-hmm. And one of the coolest thing that happened to me was like Super Bowl Sunday. It was like 2 months ago. So yeah, they call all these people. There's different vendors. I mean, I'm going up with like people that's well known in the entertainment industry. So, you know, and the rich, you know. So I got invited to cater a big time party at a billionaire's house in Beverly Park.
Wow.
Not Beverly Hills, not Bel Air, but this way on top of the community where Ellen DeGeneres live, where Steve Harvey. And guess what? Me and my team, we kicked ass because a lot of the rich people, I was standing next to, you're the Cambodian cowboy. I mean,
they already know you.
I'm just from the east side, man. I'm from Long Beach. I'm just smoking barbecue, but you're a millionaire, billionaire. And you're coming and talk to me and saying, you know, like, hey, I can't wait to try your food. It really humbled me. Like, man, I can't believe I'm here. And then, you know, and then the person that came and got my wings, my smoked barbecue wings, could do a smoked barbecue, but I do a quick flash fry with Sofia Vergara. I'm not gonna tell you the production company because we signed an NDA.
Yeah.
And then Michelle Yeoh, the Asian woman that she finally won an Oscar.
Yeah.
So that's who we serve. And then.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I liked her in a fucking Super Cop.
Yeah.
That movie.
Yeah. So it's just awesome that I got to be there and my team got to be there. So it's really.
Oh, let's talk about the team, man. You gotta have a right team, you know. So you gotta give them shout outs because it's a team thing when it comes to your food.
Yeah, you know, so, when I started for 2 years and going on to 2.5 years, I met a guy, you know, he's a local Cambodian chef named Bo. So he's been working at Lacquer down on 4th Street, you know, trying to like, you know, check out the vibe and the scene out on 4th Street.
Yeah.
So then, you know, he came and helped me for a little bit and, you know, like, and I told him like, hey, Bo, I need someone to really help me. I'm here at 10 Mile. And he didn't know like, oh, he's probably just, you know, just needs a little bit of help. But he didn't know how many people at 10 Mile wanted to barbecue. So he was like blown away. And he's like, man, I better give him a helping hand. So I'm truly blessed to have him on my team. And all these young kids, or whether it be Seth that helped me and my little nephew, Christian, from you know, my cousin's kid. Mm-hmm. He helped me during that time. And then also, Pete, he works at a sushi house, and he helps me now.
Yeah, I saw. He knows your stuff, like, and you gotta have that experience. And he has a lot of good experience.
Yeah, and then also, you know, Rachel helps me out, and Soko, and a lot of people. You know, I never say no if they want to come help me out.
You know what I noticed? Like, there's times like if you have a rush, a lot of the people who support you are fans. They'll tell you. I tell you, like, you need help, I'll help you. Like, we just, when you see long lines, it's good. But if you're short with people, we'll help. I'll help you. Anyone will help you. Like, what do you need? Because we care.
Yeah. Speaking of local help, like, all my young friends always fold up their sleeve and get down and dirty with the barbecue by giving me a hand. Like, Rithi Han, he's a community organizer. And Don Penn, he helps me out. And Cam. And then Hop. And Peter, and of course, you know, my wife, she's the backbone.
You gotta have all that stuff, backbone. That's, yeah, you need to have all that stuff. I mean, you gotta have the right team. Tell me about, man, because I'm a little butthurt, but you did a collab with a donut parlor. Mm-hmm. I wanted to try your, like, tri-tip, like, make into, like, a donut sandwich. How was that like?
Oh, man, it was one of the most amazing...
It's okay.
Yeah, I don't get to talk this much. You know, I don't really do long interviews like this. It's always, you know.
It's okay. We all like it raw. But yeah, because you have a lot of collabs coming up.
Yeah. So the most recent collab was like a month ago. I took my barbecue scene on the road. I mean, not just, you know, down the street to another city, to Beverly Hills or Irvine or what have you. I took a cross state line on the 10 freeway towing this monster all the way to Tempe, Arizona, because, you know, my sister lives out there. So we did. I met up with this awesome Cambodian master, baker. He owns a donut shop there. And we did a donut barbecue with brisket tri-tip into a sandwich. And man, there was a line like half a block long. And it wasn't just young kids, it was like older people from all walks of life. You know, there's, you know, white American, African American, Latinos and stuff that waited, and Asian Americans, and I was really blown away, and we sold out, and hence it was just an anime convention too, and an import. They just did this because they knew I was coming, so it even grew and grew. Now, like, I'm this big legend there, like, everybody still talks about it still.
Even did you have people who you met at Tempe, Arizona, make the drive to try your barbecue in Cali?
Oh, yeah. Got a lot of people, you know, that's from Tempe. They call their friends like, hey, don't miss the barbecue. He's gonna be there in Tempe. And then even the homies in Long Beach, they were doing some sort of hike or something. They in Sedona. So they stopped by. They were blown away because they always see, like, you know, I'm selling out in at 10 Mile at Trademark or Three Weaver. But they went to Tempe, Arizona at the donut parlor with Chaya. and they see me selling out and there was a line, they're like, holy shit, it's like, again, he's doing it. So that really blew my mind, just how much love and stuff that everybody has for Batamon Barbecue. Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, you know, plans for the future is to work even twice as hard to open a brick and mortar, to get a place where it's a certified, you know, like kitchen to do smoke barbecue and everything. At least, you know, I have a place where I could just do catering stuff. So that's my next plan for the future, is just get a brick and mortar this year or next year. But, you know, it's going to be harder because it's going to be involve a lot of finance and stuff that I have to take care of.
Yeah.
But I know I can do it with, you know, working harder and harder, selling out and having people there. So it's not, I don't look at the money. I look at, like, how many people can I take care of them trying barbecue, you know? Yeah. I don't want to look at people as a number. I don't never ever want to be like that, like they're just a number. But my business friend will tell me otherwise. Well, if you don't, then how you can succeed? But I don't want to do business like that. I don't want that to take away my love of doing mm-hmm. my art, the love of just meeting people, and the culture that I'm building through Batamon Barbecue. So that's what I'm afraid of, but I'm not afraid of it because time and time again, I prove those stats wrong, mm-hmm. that I'm able to talk to them, that I'm able to offer them that VIP treatment by giving them samples and stuff. And
I like
taking good yeah. care of them, you know? Yeah. It, like, it's not by pound. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, like, people should be charged barbecue by pound.
I know. They're like, man, two people for $150. Like, what's up with this?
Yeah. So that's traditionally how it's done. But I don't want to do it that way.
Okay.
A cut of brisket is a cut of brisket. A cut of tri-tip is a cut of tri-tip. And I think they just get more bang for their buck, and they're super happy about it.
Yeah. So let's talk about the brewery because we're almost at the end, and I want to talk about how did you start meeting, like, 10 Miles Brewery, Pixby Nose Farmers Market, Three Weavers, some of the best breweries out there. Then you got Trademark, shouts to Sterling and the wife. But how did you start getting, because that's where you feel like you're helping a lot of these breweries, but at the same time, you're bringing more new traffic.
Yeah. So again, like people think, man, he's probably humble, but super cocky. But again, I tell people this, I didn't call them. So Dan, you know, he's the dad here that owns
own
10 Mile and Jesse and all and his awesome family and
good
all
beers.
The beer tenders there. So he actually came to my pop-up, which I started on Market Street and Cherry right there.
Really?
And he had a mask on, so I don't know who's who. So he came and tried to barbecue, and they really, really liked it. So he told, Emma, she's their marketing. That's one of his daughter.
Uh-huh.
So she emailed me. And then Johnny, he's the successful kid that has Sweetgrass right now. He's, man, that kid's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. I bought the hat. I got one of the hats.
Yeah, so he's
DBN. I think it's DBN.
Yeah, he's a local Long Beach kid, and he worked his butt off, and he's super successful by getting everything, off the ground and having his brick and mortar.
Yeah.
He's relentless in what he wants, for his brand.
He's a hustler.
So he told me, like, hey, go talk to him. They'll get you're going to love it. But I didn't think I was ready. I didn't want to, like, approach people like I'm going to go to the brewery. So they approached me. They invited me, Emma, Dan, what's his name? Shady Grove. They have a brick and mortar.
Yes.
Which Restoration they took over. So yeah. They were leaving 10 Mile, and then at first, the patrons at 10 Mile, like, are you Shady? Shady Grove food? Like, no, I'm not them. But I'm about to want barbecue. Like, if you want a sample, so like, yeah, I'll get a sample. Or just having that. That kindness to take care of them, just to offer it, just to talk to them. If they're not buying in some, at least they can try out the barbecue. So it grew and grew. And, the second week it grew and grew. And then after the eater, nothing could stop it. It was just building so much momentum mm-hmm. that I can't even stop it. People are just, blowing up, especially that CBS morning.
Oh, that's a big thing.
That was national, so that thing even went crazier. I had like 100. It took me 2 weeks to reply every DM. I replied to every single DM.
How about the requests on the other side? That side? That must have been like a lot.
I don't know. Like I even asked Brian Aston and James. They're social media geeks, so they know all these mm-hmm. different tools and stuff, and they don't even know like what's the analytics. Like I don't know, dude. But Eater says like it's like their best story all year. So last year. like a lot of people don't know, I was like the best story for Eater, not just Eater LA, but Eater as a whole. So I was like still blown away.
Yeah, and you made a lot of connections and, you know, trademarks, Pixby Nose, Farmer's Market. You're just everywhere. And to be honest, it's an honor to have you on my show. And and also for the next 2 weeks, it's going to be Cambodian New Year.
Yeah, man, I can't wait. Like last year we had Cambodian New Year, like the post pandemic, we didn't know where to go because they opened everything up in March. Mm-hmm. And it was like near Cambodian New Year. So I'm like, hey, why don't you guys come to 10 Mile and we'll just everybody have a beer.
And that's this Friday, huh?
Yeah, you know, this was last year, so so invited, like Slap Mon, like he's blown up like crazy, you know, the Cambodian guy, Hawk and his wife Sophia, they do the Cambodian wings, you know, the Elvis and all this stuff, like amazing flavors. So he's really, really blown up. So I invited him, and I invited Ida Sweet, she's this gal, she makes the really delicious cookies and treats and stuff. So, and then we had a Khmer Renaissance there, and then it was like about 600 people. And it did so well at 10 Mile, they ran out of their glass, their glassware to put the beer. So they had to send Bobby, one of the owners too, to the Bellflower Steelcraft to get all the plastic cup to fill the beer. So they even ran out there. And I want to repeat that. It's going to be the first year at Trademark. So it's going to be this Sunday from 12 to 9 p.m. So I'm going to have a DJ. And I have the world's best Cambodian Mexican chef, which is Beeline from Chinito Tacos in Lakewood.
I need to check that place out.
Oh yeah,
I heard good things about it.
That guy's a legend. He got his training, from a Mexican bar out there in Redonda.
He said legend.
And, yeah, he works for Ortega for like over almost 10 years, and so he brought all that back, make his own taco, and it's to die for. And then also I'll have Ida Sweet. She's gonna supply the sweet stuff. Uh-huh. And we're gonna have like a backdrop. So there's gonna be a Cambodian New Year parade on Anaheim Street from Cherry all the way to Orange.
I'll
right
be there.
There.
I'll be there.
At MacArthur Park near Mark Twain Library. Mm-hmm. I'll be in there myself.
Hell yeah.
And then after that, we're gonna go to Trademark and just party. And you could like dance Sadaman. You could dance Marizon. You could dance Rambuang.
Can we do karaoke? Come on. You know how Cambodians are with karaoke in their music? Because a lot of people don't know this, because we're going to do a part 2 on this. A lot of people don't know Cambodian music back in the 60s and 70s when they had that psychedelic music and all.
Yeah.
It was at that Northern Soul Cambodian music. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. That was from the golden era during the 50s, 60s. Yeah, and then, you know, they took a lot of the Western stuff. They capture that in all these Cambodian songs that are very classical nowadays. Very. So can't wait. Yeah, Rithi Han, he's probably gonna be the one that's gonna do some karaoke with us and bless us with his great voice to celebrate Cambodian New Year. Not just for Cambodians, but for our non-Cambodian friends and you, man, adopted Cambodian.
I'm a diet. Hey, it's ever, man. People gave me like, man, why you put a Cambodian flag on your car? Can't drive Cambodian, man. If you don't like Bihok, man, I don't know, man. I mean, a lot of the food that you do, Chad, man, it's so bomb. And again, for having you to come on my show and getting to know you as a person, and that's one thing I want to get to know, just you as a person, have conversations like, how's everything going? How's your food and this? And it's like, and just meeting new people and stuff like that. It's just, to me, it's an honor, man. And I'm going to see you on Sunday. I'm going to see you Friday. I'll be over there, Absolute Best of Long Beach, you know, and I'll introduce you to my mom and everything. But do you have any last words or any shout outs before we end this episode?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to my beautiful wife, Chen Lily. She's been the backbone. We got married in 2011, and, you know, she's blessed me with 3 great boys. They're rambunctious. They're little Cambodian cowboy boys. So,
So
I can't wait to see them in their boots and jeans and their Cambodian shirt and hat. Oh. So it's going to be awesome in the parade. You know, and just to see everybody along the street, whether they're Cambodian Americans or Mexican Americans or, you know, white Americans, just to support each other. I think we need to make to mobilize as a unit, as one unit, to make a better future for all, for everybody, not just our community. So that's my word. It's just, we need to have unity and move forward, because if we don't, the world's going to pass us by, because they're united they see things differently. And as Americans, you know, as third, fourth generation Americans, mm-hmm. we have to unite. We have the best things on earth. But if mm-hmm. we don't take care of our city, our blocks, how can you enjoy? So that's it, man. And it's just like the Wild Wild West, man. You just got to go out there and kill it and shoot them dead. And whatever you believe in your heart and soul, just let it burn.
Let it, just say go for brokes. Yeah. I'm telling you, how you said earlier in the episode, you got to be a grinder.
Yeah.
You got to be a grinder. So, Chad, Cambodian Cowboy, I just want to say thank you for coming on the Long Beach Social Experiment podcast, man. I
appreciate you, Mega Man. It's an honor to be on your show, man.
And then we'll do a part two. We'll talk about conspiracies. I know you like conspiracies and stuff. So, everyone, please rate, review on Apple Podcasts. Leave me some stars on Spotify. And where can everyone follow you at? Oh, do you have only Instagram only?
Yeah, Instagram. I have Instagram. I have Facebook and Twitter and TikTok. And you can follow me on Battambang Barbecue. That's BattambangBBQ. Mm-hmm. And I'll put the schedules up every Tuesday where I'm at.
So. Oh, yeah. I like that. You're consistent. Consistent. And shout outs to all the Long Beach community. Shout outs to the Cambodian Cowboy and the crew. Shout outs to my kids. Just shout outs to everyone around the world. And please, please, everyone, follow the Cambodian Cowboy, Mega Man Approval, Best Barbecue, in my eyes, probably in all the United States. Challenge me. Challenge the Cambodian Cowboy. But to me, Best Barbecue. And for him to be in the city of Long Beach, I'm glad I made a good friend.